Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest Fantasy Fix podcast, we'll take a look back at the Genesis Open and take a look ahead at this week's Honda Classic. Welcome back to the Golf Digest Fantasy Fix podcast. I'm Alex Myers, and as usual, I'm joined by Joel Beal. Joel, lot going on last week at the Genesis Open. You had Bubba Watson winning for the first time in 2 years. You had Bubba Watson getting swatted by Tracy McGrady at the All-Star Celebrity Game. You had Tiger Woods making a second start and leaving early. Thoughts on both of those topics, I guess, to start?
You should probably start on Tiger, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's the same issue that we saw at Torrey Pines in terms of missing both ways with the driver. I think that's the one area people are harping on, and, you know, it's understandable because he has been so erratic with the big stick, but, you know, the irons weren't that sharp either for the most part, and what was really kind of troubling is after putting well at Torrey and then even on Thursday at Riviera, on Friday the flat stick just went all over the place. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hey, these bumps are to be expected. As I mentioned in a piece earlier this week, I think at this point we're really not results oriented. I think the big thing for him is just staying healthy and honestly just having these moments of promise, and which he's shown so far. But yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what he does at the Honda Classic this week. I mean, this is the guy who's only played once at Augusta since 2013. Really, if he just gets there healthy, I think we consider this, you know, this lead up a success.
Yeah, that's true. I guess we are building towards the Masters and everything else. And, you know, you can make a case at each of these places where he's played that they're not the best for him to, you know, start off at Torrey. It was a little chillier and tough rough, and in Riviera the greens are tough, but you know, he putted great on Thursday, and his short game looked incredible that first day, and then Friday he didn't look good at all, you know, trading birdies with bogeys. It seems like every time something went well for him, he gave it right back at the next hole. A couple, you know, sloppy bogeys where he'd, you know, take iron off the tee, yank it left, make a bogey. So, you know, I agree with you. We can't get too hung up on the results. It's only been two events, but his stats are really bad. Justin Ray pointed out if he had enough rounds to qualify, he would be second to last on tour in both driving accuracy and greens regulation. I know driving accuracy is not the most important stat at all, especially for a player like him. But the greens in regulation, hitting 16 out of 36 greens. For comparison, Patrick Cantlay, who led at the halfway mark, had hit 31 out of 36. So you just can't have other guys having twice as many birdie opportunities as you do.
And some of that is predicated off of the bad
driving, correct? It is, yep.
But, yeah, you're right. The iron play is definitely troubling. I think the one thing, though, that's been consistent, at least through the six rounds we've seen him, is his wedge play has been great, especially around the green. That's something that really plagued him the last 3 or 4 years of, you know, his real competitive play, even when he was going well. So the fact that that's kind of ironed out, I think, is a really good sign. A lot of this could be attributed to rust. The driver, I mean, let's be honest, he's never been an accurate driver, even in his prime. But he does need to at least get a one-way miss going on Thursday. He was one way Friday another, so it just needs to find some type of consistency off the tee, or at least make it manageable. It's funny, I'll be interested to see if he hits a lot of 3-wood this week, because he was having success with 3-wood off the tee and was still going pretty far as well.
Yeah,
I don't think he's going to that Henrik Stenson type urgency yet, but at some point you do have to kind of acknowledge if the driver is going to keep, you know, losing a shot for you every 2 or 3 holes, it might be time to at least consider that option.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I agree. I wouldn't go that route yet because you're giving up so much with the driver. Although he did it 1-3-wood about 330. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, you're right. You know, this is a guy who there were whispers. Does he have the yips? Does he have the chipping yips? Does he maybe not have the putting yips, but has he completely lost his putting touch? He does not look like that type of a player. That's for sure. He has both those things. He's answered that. You know, there were really no terrible shots around the green until you mentioned he putted poorly Friday afternoon. But I think he 3-putted the 11th hole. He had gone the first 100 holes of this comeback without a 3-putt. And then he goes back-to-back 3-putts. So I'm still not that worried. His putting looked really good. It's like you said, it really is off the tee. That's what's bringing down his greens total. That's what's giving him fewer scoring opportunities. That's what's really holding him back right now. So again, and I know he switched the shaft on the driver, everything else. He has a new driver to begin with. So there's a lot going on. And again, it's only six rounds. So you're right. I'm usually as positive as anyone is about Tiger. I got a little down.
I'm surprised.
On
I can tell right now this cadence is coming from you,
but
Ed.
Having you pick me up is unusual for Tiger. But again, I'm just glad he's playing again this week. It's a good sign. He's playing back to back for the first time. I am worried about PGA National.
This is the one. It's funny because, as you mentioned, people were citing is Torrey Pines a bit, great. It's like, well, he's won there five or whatever, eight times. So. Riviera, it's a place he hasn't won, but this is the one course where that I think really does apply of, oh boy. Now he's finished second at this tournament as well.
Yep.
This will be a really big test. I'll be surprised if he makes the cut, I think, this week, but, it really is a process, and I think we can't get too down about it. And even if the driver was to stay, you can do whatever you want off the tee at Augusta National and still be fine. So I think people have to keep that in mind as well. Accuracy does not matter at all.
That's true.
At the Masters.
And those short putts really do matter. And he was canning.
And he's grinding, too.
He was grinding.
He really is.
Yep. What about Bubba Watson? I mean, we'd kind of forgotten about this guy. Two-time Masters champ. Was in the top five in the world just a couple years ago. Won at Riviera, was the Masters favorite, and then really fell off the map. Where did this come from, and he looks like he's back now.
Well, we did mention him in the last week's podcast as someone to watch, so, at least we kind of knew it was coming. But, it's funny. I feel like a lot of people blame the switch to the Volvic ball last year as kind of the corollary for Bo's woes, but if you look at the stats, he really fell apart that second half of 2016, really from that win in 2016. This was a guy who at one point was ranked fourth in the world that year, and got left off the Ryder Cup team in the fall. So, his troubles start way before an equipment switch.
Right.
He alluded to an illness that he didn't disclose, and it was weird. A couple of times he acted like it wasn't that big of a deal, but then other parts he mentioned that illness caused him to retire 10 or 12 times. Sometimes that's Bubba, right? That's the when people say Bubba's a colorful character, that's part of the deal. That being said, he certainly didn't look like a guy who's been struggling a little bit past 2 years, and Riviera is a course that he loves. It's his third win there, but I don't think this is a 1 week aberration by any means. He's shown at least signs of life earlier this year, going back to the Titleist ball. So, I don't think he necessarily warrants favorite status yet for Augusta. But if he has another decent showing here in the next couple of weeks, I think it's a guy we have to at least put in the dark horses when it comes time for Augusta.
Yeah. No, I agree. Very impressive performance by him. I know you mentioned the golf ball didn't start him, his struggles, but it certainly didn't help.
Didn't help.
Especially because it's a guy who needs to shape the ball more than anyone, and, the golf ball is pretty crucial to that.
It is, and I think the lack of testing before he basically just liked the color by all accounts and decided to put it in play. But, no, it is amazing how people went with that story. This is the guy who really – he fell off. If you look at his second half in 2016, he really fell off, and that was when he was still playing the Titleist.
And what was so crazy is when he was left off that Ryder Cup team in 2016, he was still ranked number seven in the world, and they still – that's how badly he was playing. So, of course, right after that, he must have really fell in the actual rankings, but you could see that – unfolding.
And not only did he get left off, no one was even really making the case. If you remember, it was coming down to Kevin Chappell and Ryan Moore for that last spot, Justin Thomas as well. No one was really making a case for Bubba.
And he was, a vice captain and everything else. And, we've seen that with Tiger as well, and it doesn't mean your career is over by any means, obviously, and Tiger alluded that he would like to do both even this year. But it is interesting that those guys had kind of fallen off, that become kind of these, vice captain roles, elder statesman roles, and now Bubba's right back in the mix. We're talking about him as, possibly going to Augusta as one of the favorites.
And good for him, because I would not want to have to talk it with the fallout if he would have really struggled on Saturday after playing in the All-Star game. He would have been able to live that down. So good for him for at least stepping up. Because granted, it was a lot of pressure that he put on himself, but the fact that he still delivered, I think, says something about him.
You nailed it. If he played poorly over the weekend, especially after starting well, he would have gotten killed for not taking the tournament seriously and going to play in the celebrity game. But it was funny is he admitted all along that he cared how much he cared about the Celebrity Game. He said that he would withdraw from the tournament to play in the game if the tee time hadn't worked out and all that. I mean, I don't know about that, but I give him credit for playing. He obviously, everybody's made fun of him a bunch for getting swatted by Tracy McGrady. Although I don't know why Tracy McGrady is in that game.
No,
like a mismatch.
It's always depressing when you have those one or two, old NBA stars playing. It's like, oh, they're 25 pounds overweight. Yeah. And you could tell they're like, do I try but not really try? Yeah. It's a weird flow. Like, it's one of the worst things they televise all year, honestly. No matter what the sport, it's bad.
But, I agree. I remember, though, like Baron Davis being in it the year before. And I love Baron, but he looked, he's not playing anymore. McGrady still looked pretty good.
For the longest time, my buddy and I had a Bird versus Magic debate. I think we settled it in the fact that Magic played in one of the Celebrity Games, and I was like, no way Bird would ever lower himself to this type of standard. So, debate over.
Yep. All right. Well, we can move on to this week. The Honda Classic won last year by Ricky Fowler when, infamously, Johnny Miller ripped him for not finishing. He needs to learn to finish like a champion. He won by four shots. He shot one over the last day. It wasn't, wasn't pretty, but he won by four shots. Johnny Miller was not impressed.
It wasn't just one comment. It was a recurring
theme
throughout the day.
Yeah, he kept going on and on. Yeah, oh, he's so shaky this and shaky that. And look, we've both been tough on Ricky. There's definitely, he's not the best closer in the world. No. Let's be honest here. But he won tournament against a decent field on a very difficult track. PGA National is usually one of the toughest non-major courses around. Of course, a lot of that has to do with there being so much water. Any slight error here or there, you're in the water, you're making a double.
It's not even just the errors. It's sometimes the shots that you want to hit, and then because of the undulation, it just kind of kicks in the water. I think that's the draft guy's nuts.
So the fact that, you win an event, a PGA Tour event, by four shots, it's really tough to get on a guy, and yet Johnny Miller, I don't know if they were just bored trying to think of something or what. He really came down hard on him, and since then, Fowler fans and whatever have come back at Johnny too. Anytime he does something Johnny takes.
It was a rough year for Johnny. It was that, the Justin Thomas, Aaron Hills, who else was? Oh, Brandon Grace saying, let's be honest, this 62 is not really a 62.
That's right.
Birthdale,
it was a tough year.
It was not a great year for him. This might be his last go around, which would be a sad day if that's truly the case.
I agree. No, I hope Johnny stays around. We love Johnny, but
he's a curmudgeon, and that's okay. You got to know.
He is, and I love it, but the Fowler stuff, again, was a little much.
What made Miller so great is he was one of the first guys to not necessarily just sugarcoat everything. Yeah. The problem is he went way too far on that realm.
Right.
It's one thing if you're becoming antagonistic just to be for the sake of it. So
exactly. All right. So we got Ricky Fowler as the defending champ. Joel, I'll let you go first. Who do you like, Ricky, or are you going with someone else?
First guy for me is Brian Harman, who's never played here, but he's played so well this year. He's taken a couple weeks off, and I think that's for the better for him. I was going to worry. I think he had like four or five straight tournaments there in a row, but already has five top tens this year, coupled with the way he ended last season as well. Harman's a guy who you mentioned multiple times. This is one of the hardest courses out there. You need that grinded out mentality, and I think really Harman epitomizes that sentiment, so he's on top of my list.
Yeah, it's funny, it's like he just took off basically the West Coast swing, Harman, even though he was so hot, well, other than the Hawaii events, even though he was so hot. But I agree, he's still one of the hottest guys out there, and you're right, this course does seem to fit him. You don't think of Rory McIlroy as the prototypical grinder, but he has enjoyed success on this course. He won in 2012, which was the year you mentioned Tiger finished runner-up when he shot the 62, almost tracked him down. He lost in a playoff in 2014 when he hit that amazing 5-wood or 3-wood in there and missed the putt and then lost in the playoff. But so he's had his success here, even though you would think that this wouldn't be his best tournament. He also had that famous withdrawal with the tooth injury and everything. Yeah. we're way past that now. Rory's done a lot of great things. But anyway, I'm actually going with Rory. I was very disappointed with his results, as I think most people were, in his first two PGA Tour starts. He was coming off those two tournaments on in the Mideast where he shot 40 under par in the two close calls. comes to Pebble, misses the cut, goes to Riviera, barely makes the cut, actually did play well on the weekend, got up to, I think, about T20.
Yeah, but, finished T20.
You know, I think you could make excuses for him both times. At Pebble, he was playing with his dad. It was kind of a nice week for him. He was playing with Phil. You know, and the greens are crazy, bumpy greens. And then this past week, Riviera is a different set of challenges on the greens, and he was playing with Tiger and Justin Thomas those first two rounds. And he even came out and said that Tiger's at a disadvantage. It's a half shot around, two shots for a tournament just based on the crowd. I think he was also hinting that playing with him is also tough.
I'm glad you said it, because no one else has mentioned this week, and I thought.
But I agree with that, don't you? I mean, it's got to be. Tiger's,
it's not great.
If anything, Tiger's, since he's used to it, the effect is probably worse on his playing partners.
I still think playing in the group ahead of Tiger's is just as detrimental. But yeah, the fact, not only did that Rory said, that Justin Thomas came out as well.
Right.
It's makes you wonder how bad it was. You know, don't get me wrong, there's certainly something to that. It's nuts is that this is not exactly the height of Tiger Mania. I would like to hear Ernie Els and Phil and Duvall what their thoughts on the matter was. But no, the fact that they came out and say that, I think there is something to that. But yeah, you mentioned, actually, as bad as the putting was at Pebble, I thought for the most part he played okay at Riviera. I think the score wasn't necessarily indicative of how he played for the most part. The wedge game continues to be a concern. By wedge game, I mean, you know, 100, 120 mm-hmm, yards mm-hmm. in. That being said, this is a course where, because the way it's configured, you actually don't have a lot of wedge shots, and you have a lot of 8-9 iron shots. Mm-hmm. I think that plays to an advantage. So I'm with you. I think Rory's got to be in the handful of favorites this week.
All right, there you go. Joel's agreeing with me. You know, I'll just go next. I'm going to take another European player, which is surprising because, you know, usually I'm more American.
You're very anti-European.
Yeah, well, I've been on this kick lately. You know, we've been talking about it. I'm just looking at some of these guys like a Paul Casey, you know, who's won one PGA Tour event in 224 starts, or Lee Westwood with three wins and about that many starts. And we always talk, you know, we talk about how do these guys win so much in Europe and not on the PGA Tour? And, I mean, the bottom line is it's tougher to win on the PGA Tour. I mean, a guy like Paul Casey should have more wins on the PGA Tour. A guy like Colin Montgomery should have won on the PGA Tour, and he didn't. Anyway, that's a longer conversation.
We're endangering xenophobia right now.
Yeah,
here,
no,
so.
We are. But anyway, I will go with Alex Noren, who maybe this will help. He is playing really a full PGA mm-hmm. Tour schedule this time. This year for the first time. We saw him lose the playoff at Torrey Pines to Jason Day, where he played fantastically in that playoff until the Monday morning when he thought he had a good shot, too. He came up a yard short, went in the water. Really tough break. He could have easily won that. Jason Day walked away the winner. And then since then, a couple more top 25s, including a T16 at Riviera. So, you know, he's adjusting to playing on the PGA Tour quite nicely. Obviously, you can't get into the top 10 of the world without being a quality player, which is what he had kind of snuck into in the last year or so with just piling up a bunch of wins over in Europe. So I think he kind of keeps it going this week. I think that he's still a guy that a lot of people out there, American golf fans, aren't as up to and aren't as keen on and aren't picking as much. So I think he's presents a little value there.
He kind of fits that same profile that Danny Willett had a couple of years ago, according to the Masters. A name that, you know, even though he is playing more in America now, a name that I think still mm-hmm. eludes most U.S. viewers. But man, his game just sets up so perfectly for Augusta National. It'll be really interesting to see what he does come April.
Sure. All right. Who's your number two guy?
Number two guy for me is Gary Woodland, who's had a really successful winner so far, and then he comes to PGA National where, you know, he came in T2 last year and has another top 10 finish under his name. So, you know, Woodland's a guy who we always just kind of put there with power. But, you know, this year, actually, he's getting it done with the flat stick as well. He's in the top 10 in strokes game putting. I think he's actually fifth. So now that he's more than just a bomber, I think this could be a really, and more importantly, now that some of the, you know, family issues are behind him, I think this could be the year where Woodland kind of makes that step from, you know, a guy who's in the 30 to 40 range to maybe a top 20 player.
A guy who probably you'd say made that step last year was Daniel Berger. Mm-hmm. He's my next pick. He's obviously a local product, basically grew up down the road in Jupiter, which a lot of these players, you're going to hear that, live in the area, hashtag Jupe life. They love that saying, but he, you know, he's had a weird track record at PGA National. He actually finished runner-up as a rookie when he lost in a playoff to Patrick Harrington, of all people. Yep. That was one of the most – I mean, we think the bubble win was out of nowhere.
I mean, that was Patrick, truly out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
Probably because, 4 years, had not done
right,
anything.
And now what has he done since?
Well, you know, he's had some injury issues, and you know,
it's always like,
come on,
it's always we love Patrick Berger.
No, there it is, that anti European stance.
Yeah. I'm just saying, Daniel Berger is a little unlucky that the one time Patrick Harrington decides to win a tournament in the last decade, it's against you in a playoff. So he's obviously won since, but he's actually missed the cut here the last 2 years. But I'm really not that worried. Obviously, he's a guy who made the President's Cup team last year. Really made a big jump in his game. Got daggered by Jordan Spieth at that, you know, in another playoff at the Travelers. So he's got some early battle scars in his playing career, but he's certainly one of the more promising players. He's ranked 35th right now. I'd expect him to be well inside the top 25 by the end of the season. And not off to the greatest of starts. He did miss the cut at Riviera last week, but prior to that, he'd gone T11, T14, T11. So he's one of those guys you look up and you say, hey, he doesn't have a top 10 yet. But, you know, he's played pretty decently. And despite not, you know, you think of him as a young guy, he's really not one of the longer hitters, but he's still one of the better drivers out there. He's 19th right now in strokes gained off the tee. So, again, I'm ready for him to have another big year. And I think this is a course that kind of sets up for him a nice story with him, being the local kid and all as well.
He's got very few weaknesses as well. When you watch him, he doesn't necessarily do anything that jumps off the page, but like he's very polished for a guy that young. So I'm with you. It's actually surprising that he hasn't won more. Now, granted, again, he's still young.
Yeah.
We've been spoiled by guys like Spieth and Thomas, but I wouldn't be surprised if he has a win or two under his belt by the time we get to fall.
Sure. And your next guy?
Next guy is Tommy Fleetwood, who struggled a little bit last week, T37, really just kind of a bad weekend. He was in contention there early, but before that, he had, I think, six straight top 25s across the world, including a win in Abu Dhabi and finished really well at Dubai as well. So, Fleetwood's a guy who, driving's not necessarily his forte. It's not bad either, but he really gets done with the irons. And as we've mentioned a few times, the reason this is such a tough course is there's so much water, so accuracy really comes into play, and that especially comes into the second shots as well. So I think Fleetwood's game translates well here. It'll be interesting to see. I think he's still somewhat to Norn, still a bit of a, guy a lot of American viewers know just from the name and the hair. I know he had that nice run at Erin Hills, but for the most part, it is still kind of an unknown. So I think he gets that. He starts changing that this year, and I wouldn't be surprised if he starts getting that done this week.
Yeah, again, PJ National is not the longest course.
No.
It's 7,100 yards, par 70. It's nothing crazy for these guys, but it really is, I think, the fear of the water there. You talk about a course that, could host a U.S. Open or something. I mean, it's so tough. Almost every shot, you're worried about the big disaster, and that definitely gets into players' heads. And I know Ricky was 12 under last year, but usually this
is. You won by four.
Yeah. Usually this is 8 under or so is a playoff or a win. I mean, it's a tough.
Just twice in the past 8 years have guys gone double digits in terms of under. So, yeah, you're right. 7-8 under usually gets it done.
Yeah, so it's a tough course. One guy, my final pick, and it's a little bit of a sleeper pick because he'd missed three consecutive cuts till last week. He finished T37 at Riviera. He's a guy, though, who has won here before. Again, we're talking about accuracy. Luke Donald.
You're kidding me. He was
Wow. See, man, we this just proves we do not compare notes. We both picked Luke Donald. Amazing. I also did want to mention that he went to Michael Jordan's 50th.
I got
to
be honest. I was even going against it. I was like, I thought you were going to make fun of me. Like, wait, this isn't heritage. This is.
Well, right. There's certain spots that you can definitely still pick Luke Donald. And I think this is one of those spots. We mentioned it's not the. It's not a bomber's paradise here. He's won here before. And he's still getting it done with the irons. 45th strokes gained approach to the green. And that's even with three consecutive missed cuts thrown in there. And he's 12th in putting, which that's the formula for Luke Donald. It's funny. He's been called kind of the last of his kind to get to number one in the world. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about British players again. We're talking about short hitters, and not only short hitters, short crooked hitters. He's done a lot of work with Mark Brody, the great statistician, and he came up with, he basically admits that he's giving away two shots to the field with his driving, so he needs to make up, or sorry, about a stroke and a half. He needs to make up 3.5 strokes elsewhere because you need to be about plus two overall, and that's basically impossible. But for 1 year, he made every putt, and he got to number one. And obviously, for other years, he's been a very good player. Obviously, a European Ryder Cup stalwart as well. But you know, he just turned 40. He just went to Michael Jordan's 55th birthday party. I think maybe some of the greatness rubbed off on him.
Let's go with that.
He's feeling it. There you go.
Yeah,
Luke Donald.
He's not a guy that you'll probably hear at a major ever again. But you know, places like this, Hilton Head, Colonial, things that were you know, distance doesn't necessarily equate to a big finish. You're right. I think he's still a viable option.
That was your pick?
It really was Luke Donald. I had this.
Wow.
I was going to make a case for bogey avoidance as well. This year he's actually ranks pretty low on it, not necessarily in a good way, but historically he's been good about avoiding the big number the past 4 or 5 years. So just because this year there's still not really enough rounds logged to kind of get a good feel where he's going. But yeah, I think that's another reason it's going to keep him in this week, is he might not rack up the birdies like everybody else, but as you mentioned, you don't necessarily got to go really low here to compete. So I think Donald, sneaky bet to get finish in the top 15 this week.
Wow. Yeah, same. Well, all right. Well, that wrapped up pretty quickly. Joel, what about, this was your first Valentine's Day as a married man.
It was.
What was that like?
Well, I actually have this off. Let me take this back.
Oh boy, he's smiling.
Yeah. First of all, two things. We went to a movie, actually, kind of on your advice. I, Tanya. Not great. We both
get out of here. I'm leaving the studio.
And I told our colleagues, we usually have the same type of taste in sports movies, but this is the one thing where I cannot agree with you, my friend. Me and the wife did not like it. But
both of you didn't like it.
Both of us didn't like it, but it was good because you know
I don't know what's not to like.
We were just happy to go out because last year at this point she was in bed rest, so we were just lucky to go out. Other early faux pas was, we went out since it was Ash Wednesday, no meat for the Catholic boy and me, so I didn't realize that until after I ordered. So then I had this weird juxtaposition of, do I eat and sin, or do I just let this go to waste? So it was a little bit of a struggle, but
did you eat it?
Of course.
Oh, okay. You gotta eat.
Exactly.
You order something. Jeez.
But I mean, no, it was good.
I'm so disappointed you didn't like I, Tanya.
I don't know what else to say,
but
it was
bummer.
Just...
you're the first person who I've heard who hasn't.
I know. Listen, I went in with high hopes. I saw the Rotten Tomatoes score.
So
I had the peer reviews, but just couldn't get down with it.
I'm on a real Tanya Harding kick. There was this documentary as well, and it basically made it like the movie was pretty on point as well, which I always like.
Was that the ABC 20 for 20 thing? I saw that. I got excited for it.
Yeah, I think that was it.
Yeah.
It was good.
It was. Not so much I, Tanya, though.
Well.
Allison Janney, she was great.
I mean,
I'll say
how...
that.
Yeah, and Margot Robbie wasn't great either. Come on. She learned how to skate for the role.
Congrats.
You give her the Oscar. Oh, man, I'm so disappointed. I was going to tell you that my big Valentine's Day thing was that my wife got me a giant Hershey Kiss. It weighed 12 ounces. I ate it in 3 sittings. I'm such a pig. It's ridiculous. But
hey, that's why you're low energy today.
I'm struggling. But I'm going to need to – I need a pick-me-up after you – you crushed my I, Tanya review. Ah, damn. All right. Well, anyway, we are looking forward, obviously, to seeing Tiger back in action this week at the Honda Classic. Thanks to everyone for listening. Please subscribe to us on iTunes if you haven't done so already. And check back next week when we wrap it all up again. You really didn't like it?